on the 26th of April this year, you will remember from our own coverage here on LBC, an inquest jury found that 96 people who died at or as a result of the Hillsborough disaster were unlawfully killed and were not responsible in any way for their own or others' deaths. Now, the jury found that failures by South Yorkshire Police on the day were largely to blame, but I think it's only fair to say they also blamed various other authorities responsible for things like match planning, stadium safety, emergency services response as well. So Norman Betterson was a chief inspector at the time in South Yorkshire Police and went on subsequently to become chief constable of Merseyside Police, by which time many of the Hillsborough families regarded him, and still do, I think it's fair to say, as, and I won't dress this up, Sir Norman Betterson, a conniving liar, inextricably involved in a cover-up which began the moment match commander David Duckenfield lied by saying Liverpool fans had forced a gate, causing the crush in the Leppings Lane end, which killed the 96 people who died, many of them children. Now, Sir Norman Betterson is with me in the studio. He's written a book, which I have read, called Hillsborough Untold, Aftermath of a Disaster, and he joins me now. Good afternoon to you.
Hello, Sean.
Now, what remains untold about Hillsborough that materially adds to the truth?
The two things that I think are contained in the book is, one, a perspective from South Yorkshire Police headquarters, because it's ever so interesting how you just introduced the topic with the supposition, the slur, really, that from the moment that the disaster happened, South Yorkshire Police were running around like headless chickens trying to cast the blame somewhere.
No, but I'm going to be fair to you in this half hour, and I hope you'll be fair to me as well, because I didn't talk about running around like headless chickens. I just reported the fact that David Duckenfield lied on the day by saying that Liverpool fans had forced a gate, lie that the then Chief Constable of South Yorkshire Police, Peter Wright, had to correct later.
He corrected it 2 hours later.
Yeah.
Sorry, what you did actually, Shearer, because I listen to these things more closely than some people.
I imagine
And what you did is you did a segue from David Duckenfield's despicable lie, which the Chief Constable corrected within 2 hours of him making it. You segued into the concept of South Yorkshire Police trying to cast the blame. And that has been a very traditional link that has been made over the years. And
I haven't yet mentioned South Yorkshire Police trying to cast the blame. I've talked about South Yorkshire Police being held responsible by an inquest jury, in large part, for what happened. I haven't come on to what South Yorkshire Police did as a cover-up.
Then let's move on.
I understand you're doing a series of interviews here, so you may be just in your mind just girding your loins for that, and you should be, because I'm going to come to that, but I haven't mentioned that yet. But I'm... To my original question of what materially adds to the truth
things.
Lord Taylor's report, independent panel into Hillsborough, the second inquest, which took place over 2 years, the IPCC investigation ongoing, which reports to the CPS in December.
Yes.
What don't we know?
Right, two things. One is that the perspective of what was going on at South Yorkshire Police headquarters, that really hasn't been told from anyone that was within police headquarters. The second is, you're in a very unusual position in being able to piece all those elements of the post-disaster procedures and inquiries.
You were in rooms that I wasn't, that many other people were not.
A lot of things that have happened over the last 27 years have actually been forgotten. Not purposely forgotten, not maliciously forgotten, but have been overlooked. And so one of the big things is the idea that within 16 weeks of the disaster, Lord Justice Taylor had settled the matter. He'd weighed all the evidence and he'd come to the conclusion within 16 weeks of the disaster that South Yorkshire Police were to blame for the disaster that occurred. Mainly to blame is what he said. Mm. And that's been reaffirmed, as you've quite rightly set out, it's been reaffirmed in the recent inquest. But the thing that I always ask people is, what do you think has happened in the intervening 27 years for the South Yorkshire Police to have covered something up when it was settled within 16 weeks and reaffirmed now? And I also then tend to ask a supplementary question, a little bit closer to home, What role do you think I played in that intervening 27 years?
Well, let me just... we'll come back to Taylor in a second, because you're right. Yes. Very early on, it was established that the fans were not to blame for that. Yes. Except for the fans and their families, it wasn't sorted. And for me, as I was a journalist, I was a BBC journalist for the 25 of those years. And so I had to cover that story in a very particular way, a way I no longer have to cover it. So I will bring some of my personal reflections to bear. Now, on the question of the fans being to blame, that lie, the original lie by David Duckenfield, and the, you know, the attempts to change statements which have been established in law as having happened, that lie carried on for the 27 years, and it carried on partly by South Yorkshire Police up to and including the period that the Warrington inquests were being held. The issue of fans' drunkenness, the issue of fans' arrival and their promptness of arriving was raised again by South Yorkshire legal representatives in those inquests. That's how the lie continued, despite Taylor. You know that.
No, let us try to be fair that evidence that is given to any court process is unlikely to ever be 100% all one way. And what court processes have to do, Taylor had to do it, Lord Justice Goldring had to do it at the inquest, what judges and juries have to do is weigh the evidence. And they weighed the evidence appropriately.
Yes, but why, when you say that 16 months after Hillsborough, it was settled...
16
was,
weeks, actually.
16 weeks, sorry, yes. It was firmly settled. Yes. There was an interim report and then a full one, wasn't there? That it was firmly settled that the fans were not responsible. And yet, the police force involved, South Yorkshire Police, continued 24, 25, 6 years down the line with those lies. If the lie was not still being believed, they wouldn't have bothered. The lie was still being believed.
But here's the thing, and it's ever so difficult to put over. What is it that causes us to jump from evidence given by certain people to the conclusion that it's a lie? It may be evidence that is actually overweighed and overwritten by very different evidence. So I'm sure you'll get on in this interview to my ill-timed and ill-judged statement after the Hillsborough Independent Panel report, where I referred to fan behaviour, but to do only one thing with that reference. I referred to it, and I've been castigated for it. I referred to it only to say, the very next sentence, that this was in no way a contributory factor to the disaster.
I know you said that, but you said fan behaviour made the job of the police difficult. Yes. Within hours of the inquest finding that fan behaviour contributed in no way to what happened on that day, weren't you blaming snow for an avalanche when you said that?
No, I wasn't. What I was trying to do, I'd been tarred with a brush of a denier, a fan accuser. That's how I'd been portrayed in the press after the Hillsborough Independent Panel report. And so my response was, and I regret the response, my response was, fan behaviour, to the extent that it mattered at all, made the job outside the turnstiles a little harder, but it was in no way a contributory factor to the disaster. And the only redeeming feature I can find in that statement is that it was an honestly held belief.
But crowds are always policed. Crowds in all kinds of events, not
South
just sporting events, are always
failed.
Policed. Yeah.
The South Yorkshire Police failed in terms of its command and control on the 15th of April 1989.
It's more than that, though. You insist that there was no cover-up, and yet, as soon as I tweeted today that I was interviewing you, people started to send me documents that I have no way of verifying, but you know that there are documents out there. Some or all will be legit, in which you have signed or added notes to documents which were asking about altering or adding to police statements. Mm. Now, why?
I'm in some difficulty. What there was a process of emendation of police officers' original accounts into statements to go into the Lord Justice Taylor inquiry. That is what campaigners have pointed to since the Hillsborough Independent Panel report as evidence of jiggery pokery that South Yorkshire Police was somehow corrupting that.
The police officers' statement. I mean, it was found that police officers' statements were changed.
Yes, but
was it not?
But if
But just to be clear, you agree that that was found.
If you have read the book, you'll see that I explained that.
I explained that in some detail. I know, but we're on the radio now, so if you could just explain it here.
What was changed, and this is the difficult thing, because if what you start off with is a supposition, it's very difficult without unpicking it. What was changed was police officers were asked to provide to them to do for themselves an aide memoir as an early recollection of what went on. Those aide memoirs were collected in so that we could make some sense of the day. Then West Midlands Police, who were the independent investigators immediately after the disaster, told the force 7 days before the inquiry started that they weren't going to be able to get round to take statements for the inquiry. Could they therefore have some self-provided statements from these officers? The lawyers decided, not the police, the lawyers representing the police decided that they were not factual statements for the purposes of a judicial inquiry, and they themselves looked at the aide memoirs and recommended what might be amended, reviewed, and revised.
But do you accept? In the statement. Do you accept?
But can I say this? This is a really important point. I wasn't involved in that process, and no one has ever hinted that I was involved in that process.
Do you accept that statements were changed in a way that changed reality to the person reading it?
That's what the Warrington inquest found. The honest answer I've got to give to that is that that is a matter still, after over 4 years, that's subject to investigation by the IPCC.
Individual officers compared their original statements with the ones given to the...
I'm not in a position to prejudge the IPCC investigation on that score. The only thing I am in a position to say is that it doesn't involve me.
Let me just give you a taste, Sir Norma Bettison, of the texts and tweets coming in. Some of them aren't nice, but that won't surprise you. Sheila, can you ask your guest why a special constable was forced to change her statement several times, says Gary. Norma Bettison is shameless, trying to flog a book out of Hillsborough. Shocking, says this tweet from Brian. Why are you giving airtime to that nasty liar? He is just trying to profit from the tragedy of police blunders and cover-ups, says Robert in Sittingbourne. As much as the Hillsborough inquiry was needed for closure and the police were partly at fault, no doubt, but there is no denying the fans who broke into the ground and pushed forward that day contributed to the tragedy, says Martin in Sunderland. They did not, did they?
They did not. Martin's wrong, but a lot of people who've said things about me are also wrong. This is an event that will echo through eternity, and a lot of the things that are said around the event on all sides are supposition, smears, and just plain wrong facts. And that's the reason that I've written my book.
But that's a strange motivation when the facts have been...
No, the facts of the disaster, but it isn't just what...
But the facts of the disaster were reviewed, including what South Yorkshire Police did subsequent to it, up to and including this very year.
Well, there's been evidence given to the Lord Justice Taylor, but only to help the jury in determining the cause of death, etc.
I am bringing it back to April this year, and one of the things that the families were very distressed by, and I know you're not at South Yorkshire Police anymore, but the families were incredibly distressed by, A, the publication of your book at all. I know it was due to be published earlier, but sensibly you didn't publish it at the time of the inquest, because that would have been very unseemly. But they were very distressed by the notion that still, 27 years on, during that harrowing experience, and I know you had your day there as well, harrowing experience during the Warrington inquests, that the lawyers for South Yorkshire Police were still reiterating those lies when, as you say, Lord Justice Taylor had put them to bed. Now, you know that that pain is still current. You know that that deception, that cover-up, that attempt to smear is still current.
I'm not sure I do. I'm not sure I do. Certainly,
well, have a look at the transcripts of the Warrington inquest.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I know it to have been an attempt at covering up.
What was it then?
A presentation of evidence that could be weighed in the But I'm not an apologist for South Yorkshire.
No, I know you're not.
I haven't worked there since 1993.
I know, but a big part of your book, and one of your own stated reasons for writing it, is to take us into those rooms, take us into those discussions in South Yorkshire.
But that was 27 years ago.
No, but more recently than that, Hayley Court, a press officer, was hired by South Yorkshire Police, and she told The Guardian, I know, but it's just to give a sense of what South Yorkshire Police are still doing. They're supposed to be different/improved, but they're different and they're still doing the same as your day. She was instructed to emphasise evidence considered favourable to the force to journalists attending those hearings, including, again, allegations of drunkenness, lateness and misbehaviour by Liverpool, all refuted by the inquest.
I can't even comment on it because I'm not an apologist for anything that's going on. What I am...
But you can comment on whether you think that's acceptable or not.
Well, I think it's
unacceptable.
I don't know the facts. I do know that that's what the lady said. I do know
that. So she's lying as well.
No, I'm not. No, please, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that those have been subject to investigation, and I don't know the results of that investigation.
One of the things I noticed from reading the book, you talk about your time at Merseyside Police. Yes. I was a reporter at for a period of the time that you were Chief Constable, so I know that it was a very sensitive issue that you were appointed at all. What was your motivation in applying to be the Chief Constable of Merseyside Police?
Here we go.
Did you expect problems?
People ask me that question against the context of today. It was 10 years after the disaster.
But nobody in Liverpool thought it was an old story.
No, of course it wasn't an old story. But actually, during that 10 years, nobody had ever questioned anything that I'd done, let alone criticised anything that I'd done in that 3 months, and that's all it was, a start and finish task leading up to the Taylor inquiry. Nobody had ever questioned or criticised that.
And you basically reported back to South Yorkshire Police every moment of that inquiry.
I was in the inquiry every day and reporting back on progress. But can I just make this point? A big element of uncovering the whole truth about Hillsborough has been as a result of the Hillsborough Independent Panel report.
You've questioned.
Now, that report does not accuse me of any wrongdoing at all in any of its 395 pages. And yet, Maria Eagle MP jumped straight to the conclusion in the Houses of Parliament under parliamentary privilege by accusing me of orchestrating a black propaganda unit.
She, just to again explain to people, she used parliamentary privilege to say that two witnesses had come forward to say that you yourself had told them that your job was to concoct stories against the fans.
But she preceded that, she prefaced that by saying, I accused him in 1998 and went on to accuse me then of orchestrating a campaign of black propaganda, which is not true.
Why do you think the independent panel isn't independent?
They're independent of government. They're independent of all the organisations that have let the families down so badly over the 27 years. But they are... some of the key people on it were not agnostic about some of these issues that we're talking about now. Some of the people had written books and made documentaries over those intervening years.
Phil Scraton and the late Katie Jones produced one.
And the most disappointing thing that I came across recently was the fact that Andy Burnham MP, who was instrumental in getting the independent inquiry set up in the first place, told Professor Scraton, who had written a book about these issues, that what he wanted was that book converting into a government document with a HMSO label on the front. So, I say...
It's not the panel's fault, is it?
I say, but that's an unusual approach to independence.
But isn't that because there was an acceptance that they'd got it right, particularly after the inquests?
No, what they did is a remarkable job, and they did it from a particular perspective, and they're the only people that could have written that report that achieved what it achieved, and they are to be congratulated, because what it achieved, it brought to public recognition the fact that these families had been waiting 27 years for a proper, full and fair hearing.